Welcome back to the Drain Plug Podcast. This episode is sponsored by TBNation.net. Please visit TBNation.net for all your John Boat needs. We got all kinds of cool things on the website now. Electric outboards, lithium batteries, EVA foam.
Boat toys.
All make sizes, shapes, colors.
And for all ages,
yep.
So we got a special guest tonight. I've been looking forward to doing this podcast for a while. Are we allowed to use your government name?
Yes.
Okay. This
is strange. Pronouns are chicken and wing.
So he's actually one of our customers. We assisted him with a boat build. Was it last year?
Yeah, early 23.
Yeah. So we assisted him with his boat build, but he did a lot of it on his own, and we're going to walk through the process and what all you did and what your decision-making process was and what you like and don't like and what you want to redo and all that kind of good fun stuff. But he also brought us adult toys. Liquid and adult toys. Not those kinds.
And they smell really, yeah. Oh, yeah, that could have been weird. Yeah. Yep.
The first one is the Bell Mead, and what is it's just a regular bourbon?
So it's just their signature Bell Mead bourbon. A friend of mine turned me onto that probably 4 or 5 years ago.
And where are they located at? You said they're in Tennessee?
Nashville?
Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah.
So they, Jack Daniels with Old Number 7, is that what it is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I didn't realize this, doing a little research, they actually numbered those distilleries in Tennessee. So this was actually Old Number 5.
Really?
So, yeah. So
that's pretty cool.
And they based it off of like tax numbers or tax districts or something like that back then.
That's pretty cool.
So Jack Daniels is Old Number 7. This is Old Number 5.
This reminds me of something. I'm trying to remember. I've tried something similar to this.
Yeah, it does seem very familiar to me, but I don't know.
I just don't remember what it was that we tried that was very similar to this.
And look, if you don't like it, you're not going to hurt my feelings. I'm still going to drink it. But
I actually really do like it. It kind of reminds me of the Chattanooga whiskey that I had not too long ago. A little bit. That silver label. I'm trying to remember what the proof on it. I think it was like a cask strength or something. But it's very good, though.
Yeah, I like that.
I know what it is. It smells like that Yellowstone.
Yeah, I saw that you guys had it on a podcast like recently, right?
Yeah, we have a store pick Yellowstone. Well, I have one that a customer gave to us, and then you have one that you bought, and they were pretty much the same.
Yeah.
But it's got that real heavy cherry note. And actually, I don't like this one a little bit better than the Yellowstone.
I do.
It tastes really good, though. We're going to be trying another one here in a minute. And this is their standard release.
So that's their standard, kind of their bread and butter. You know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And what was that bottle retail for?
God, maybe 42, 45.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
No, that's a good entry point. At least it was pre-inflation.
How about that? Well, yeah. I don't know. I love balling on a budget bourbons. Mm. Yeah.
So
you find good stuff like that.
But that Reserve, dude, that stuff's good.
We're about to find out here in just a minute.
It's really good.
So what kind of boat do you have? Because I don't remember, to be honest with you. It's been so long.
That's okay. So I've got a 1648.
You remember what brand it is?
I do, actually. I actually found the ad for it.
It's a Tracker, isn't it?
It's a Bass Tracker 2. Get this. A 1974 Bass Tracker. So that boat is 50 years
74?
Old.
74? I remember it was old. I didn't remember that being that old.
That boat's 50 years old this year.
Wow.
Holy balls, that's really old.
That's probably why that thing weighs like a tank, dude.
Yeah, well, I know it has a good hull on it.
Yeah.
But I think that's back when they used to have the, like, 100-gauge hull, or the 0100 hulls.
Yeah. It's a little thicker.
Not 0100, it's 100 hulls. It's the thickness instead of, like, the 080s that they have now. They're super thin.
Yeah.
So you got it. And we did, all right, so you brought it in, we did the transom on it,
mm-hmm.
We did basically like the subfloor,
mm-hmm.
and welded in the framing for
correct.
You.
Correct, and I got the hatches from you guys. So I got the one big hatch in the front, then I got the live well, and then I've got the hatch in the back to flip up for the gas tank and the battery.
Gotcha. So our part of it was very minimal. We literally just put the subfloor in, and you did foam under the floors.
Mm-hmm.
And then welded in the framing for
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
What? So that's my first question. What made you decide to do that instead of doing your own framing?
That's a great question. And I don't want to be long-winded with it, but I've always
about
been
all
one,
night.
Yeah, don't worry about
but,
that.
But I've always been one to tackle projects, like stuff that I absolutely knew nothing about, right? So I'd watched a lot of videos, and quite honestly, the way I ended up finding you guys was through Anthony Jones.
Yeah.
So I found Brigade Boats, and it was actually wasn't even Brigade Boats.
He was just Anthony.
Yeah, he was just Anthony Jones. And I was surfing YouTube one night, and my son-in-law and I were watching, and the kids were in and all this kind of stuff. We were just watching, kept flipping through it. And I was like, dude, I think I'm going to do that. Like, I think I'm going to do that. So then anyway, I ended up finding TB Nation. And then I saw the framing, and I watched a few videos. And I think it was some of Ryan's Fire and Fishing videos where you guys had done angle.
Yep.
And I was like, that's going to be – I'm all for a project. That's going to be maybe a little more tedious than I want to be involved in. And I'm like, you know, I'd kind of rather have this thing welded in personally than, you know, kind of having to cut and measure and make sure the deck's level all the way across. And, you know, I just know what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. Yeah. And I had no idea what I was really getting myself into. But I was happy with what my return on my investment was and what I ended up with. So,
because you're not the first customer that we've had that's come in that's like, hey, can y'all just weld the frame in and I get the lids like already, you know, kind of fitted and then I just finish the rest of it myself.
Sure.
And, you know, it's been really, really great for people. Everybody that's done it seems to think that's, like, the way to go when it comes to boat building.
I would encourage it.
Yeah.
Personally. And that's not to take away from your kits that you guys already have for people who want to frame on their own and that sort of thing. Listen, man, if you had some time in metal fabrication and that's kind of your background or you've been around that, I wasn't, even though my dad was a welder. He didn't weld aluminum.
Yeah.
So I just like the welded deck. It feels sturdy.
So when you got it back, mm-hmm. what was your first item on the list to tackle? Because you had a lot of things to do. You still had electrical to do. You had paint to do. You ended up finishing out the inside. You had turf. I mean, you had a ton of stuff to do. What was your mindset going in? What'd you do first?
So the first thing I did was after I apologize for not really discussing the purchase.
He didn't clear it with a family accountant first.
I did not.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that did not go over well. I took it and I flipped it up. I had a set of sawhorses. I flipped it over on the sawhorses and then I just got to sanding. I put a respirator on or a mask on and I just went to sanding. And I kept sanding and sanding and sanding. You know, I think you guys had gotten that boat out of Florida.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it had sat in some salt water for a while. So I had a couple spots on it. So I just got it as smooth as I possibly could. And I think you and I may have talked a couple times about the Gator Glide.
Yes, that is the one that I picked up out of Florida. Yeah. I'm sorry, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. I forgot about that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay.
I forgot.
So for anybody listening who's like, what the hell are they talking about? we got a deal on this boat in Florida. Ryan went down there and picked it up I think it was on a weekend or something. And they had a bunch of parts and stuff that we really wanted more than we actually wanted the boat. But we figured we'd hold on to the boat because we'd have a customer like you come in and be like, I don't have a boat yet. You guys have one, and we just happen to have it. I think the only thing we had done to it is put a transom in it.
Yeah, it has an aluminum transom. Yeah. So you guys framed it out and it's got...
And I think the whole reason that we did that is because it had those old live well pumps that were like in the back, and they were way too big for what we were going to use. So we took the old live well pump out and plugged all the holes, and I think it had like a bunch of little pin holes in it from where people had put screws for transducers and stuff in it. So yeah, that's right. All right, so you actually got the boat from us.
I forgot about that little detail.
Okay, back to the story.
But backing up, I had looked on like Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and that sort of thing, and I'm like, these people are asking for me to go into. I know what I'm going to do roughly, and I'm going to strip this boat down. I'm not going to pay that amount of money what some of people were asking.
Yeah.
For some of these boats. So I kept looking, and then you and I were talking. You were like, well, we got this boat. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
that's where we got the rivet gun from.
Yeah.
That's the whole reason that you wanted to get that boat, because we got the rivet gun.
Yeah.
And another Milwaukee 12 volt rivet gun
battery,
with it.
Yeah.
Sounds like a pretty good deal.
Well, the thing is, the guy started the project, like, he wanted to build the boat, and he bought the rivet gun and was like, I don't have time to do this or whatever the deal was.
All right.
And I drug it back from, because we have family in Savannah. And I was going down to Savannah for the weekend and just popped down real quick down to Florida, picked it up, and drove back.
Yep.
Brought it back, ratchet straps and all.
Yep. Yes. There's like, I think I had to go buy more ratchet straps, to be honest with you. The trailer and everything, it was rough.
It was rough.
But
it was hard
back.
To find that good of a deal on a Bass Tracker, you know, style boat anywhere, because everybody wants way too much money for them. But I had we wanted the rivet gun more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, I'll throw all these in if you come buy it. I was like, all right.
The other rivet gun was worth the trip.
Yeah, it was.
Sold.
Yeah.
So I flipped it over and put it on Sawhorses in the garage, sanded it down. And then, like I said, you and I talked quite a bit about the Gator Glide on the bottom.
Yep.
So I needed to get it sanded down, obviously really good. And I used that green, I think it's frog tape.
Yep.
So I marked it off with frog tape. And then it's a process with the Gator Glide, right? I mean, you got to do the primer. You got to do like 3 or 4 coats of the primer and let it dry.
Yep.
Then you got to do 3 or 4 coats of the Gator Glide. And then once I did that, I did the Monster Liner, which is basically bed liner, roll-on bed liner.
Yep.
Did that. Let it sit for probably 2 or 3 days in the garage and let it kind of cure. And then I, excuse me, I took the, my neighbor and I took the trailer over to the neighborhood swimming pool. I mean, it's March, dude. Nobody's swimming in the water. Yeah, it's too cold, yeah. Right? And we sandblasted it in the parking lot.
Also, it was one of the little Harbor Freight.
It was usually one of the Harbor Freight, ones, yeah. And we sandblasted it in the parking lot, right? And just got and just literally took it down to kind of like the bare aluminum, got any oxidation it was on and off. And then we spray painted it with cryolite or whatever the spray paint, black spray paint. Was spray
like
painted
Krylon.
It. Krylon, that's yeah. It. Spray painted with Krylon. Drug it back to the house, let it sit in the driveway for a day, let it kind of bake on, and then we it took me and like 3 other guys, this boat's so heavy, to get it off the Sawhorses in the garage, literally back up, and we're all struggling to get this thing flipped over and get it back on the trailer. So we did that, then I started painting on the inside of it. The hatches were already in. Once everything dried out, then I transitioned kind of to the next step.
And then you bought a sheet of aluminum from us to do all your decking and yep. all because the floor was already done.
Mm-hmm.
You just had to do your walls
yep.
and the top deck is
correct.
Pretty much it.
That's correct.
So what did you end up using for like cutting all that decking material out?
All of the above.
Everything?
Yeah.
Dude.
Sounds about right.
I mean, I got so many strange looks from my neighbors. Dude, I used a Diablo saw blade. I used an angle grinding cutoff wheel. I used a reciprocating saw. I mean, anything in it. Jigsaw until I broke all my jigsaw blades.
That'll happen.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but I finally got it all cut. There's a couple of areas that I wasn't real happy with, but it still fit. And it looked fine. And only if you're looking for it are you going to notice it.
Yeah.
In terms of the cutting of the metal. If I had it to do over again, I probably would have used, and you got to cut up in certain areas. You've got to cut like a rounded area, so it
like
makes
up
a little,
around the front.
Yeah, where the boat kind of rounds going towards the bow. The cutoff wheel was probably the easiest and the quickest. It kind of went through it pretty quick. It just makes them a really loud racket.
Really?
Yeah,
that one's loud, a lot of vibration. But to me, that's always been the tool that I felt like I could control the best
yep.
and get the cleanest cut.
Yep.
And once you get it started in that, you know, that that disc is through the aluminum, it almost kind of just cuts like butter.
It does. Yeah.
But
you just got to make sure you get that guard on it. I did have one blade break on me.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And if you don't put that guard on it, I put it on right after that because it, yeah,
it'll scare the
junk
out of you.
Yeah.
I've had to have. I personally like the jigsaw, but you have to keep a fresh blade on it. Mm-hmm. They get so caked up mm-hmm. with aluminum when they get hot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've just been using a jigsaw for so long. It just seems to be always my go-to. What's either that or a skill saw.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think skill saw. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That new Bauer that we got, the metal cutting mm-hmm. saw. It's basically a skill saw, but it's just designed to cut metal.
Yeah,
that thing's been phenomenal.
Has it?
I love that thing.
I found that they I used a metal Diablo blade, and that was a really expensive blade to use for
yeah.
cutting
yeah.
like sheet aluminum. But it for the straight cuts, it went right through
yeah.
it.
Yeah, so. We've always used wood blades.
Yeah,
wood blades are what we've always used on skill saws, and they always work fine.
The metal cutting blades have always been dangerous for me.
Yeah,
you had one kick back on.
Yeah,
did you?
Yes, yeah.
On our miter saw, yeah,
it did it three times in a row.
We had bought an expensive one too. I want to say it was a Diablo.
It was like $115
yeah,
for the blade.
It wasn't a cheap blade, but it was a 10-inch miter saw is what we got back there. And I remember when it happened too. It kicked back a piece of a angle aluminum at you one time.
It went right past my face. I was like, "Nope, I'm done."
Yeah, we changed it back out and we put a wood blade back on it.
Have them welded in, kids.
Kidding. Yeah. So then, once you got the decking and stuff on, you'd already mm-hmm. done all the interior paint at that point?
I did all the interior paint, and then before I put the decking on, I did all my wiring.
Smart.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I did all my wiring. Like, I don't know how many times I mocked up the where the trolling motor was going to go, where my wiring was going to go. Like, you cannot just don't be so – the only advice I think I would probably give when it comes to the wiring is don't get too anxious with that and in putting the decking on to try to get out on the water.
Yeah.
Like, slow down. Think it through. Do a lot of planning. Think this through. Like, you know, okay, do I want lights in the cockpit area if you're going to put cock lights? If I want – do I want to put a radio in? Yeah. You know, all that kind of stuff. So
what all did you – I know you put a lot of stuff in your boat. We'll start from the front. What did you do with a trolling motor?
So I got an Ultrex 80-pound thrust.
Okay.
So I got my batteries from you. So I got those
the powerhouse.
Yep. So I got two 100-amp-hour 12-volt powerhouses in the front for the trolling motor. And then I got an accessory battery that to run all the accessories. Headlights on the front.
Yep.
Because you did the headlight fabrication for the
That was one of the things we did. We made kind of like I did on my boat, a little bumper that goes across the front that you could put the fog lights in or the, what are they called, light bars?
Yeah.
Light bars, I guess.
Nylights?
Yeah, nylights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you put graphs up front?
I did. I've got a 9-inch Helix.
Okay.
Hummingbird Helix up front.
Hummingbird fan. Nice. I like Hummingbird. Ryan does not.
Yeah. No, I just Garmin's kind of a little bit more affordable to get into. That's all.
Yeah, I mean it is. I mean it's, you know, looking. I think they all have their strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
I've seen some really good stuff put out by Garmin.
Yeah.
By Lowrance, by Hummingbird. So I just went with Hummingbird because I knew I was going to go with an Ultrex
trolling
motor, and I kind of want to keep it standard across the board. So,
yeah.
I did put deck lighting on. I did do green deck lighting. It doesn't go all the way across the deck. It goes, you know, or all the length of the boat, it goes to the front of the deck, and then the cockpit area. I put lights in the cockpit area so you can flip them on, and you can kind of see down in the floor of the cockpit.
Yeah.
And then behind me, behind the cockpit, in the second part of the boat, there's deck lighting back there. I mean, it's got obviously the nav lights. I did the little cat's eye looking nav lights on the side. It's got a radio in it. I bought my switch panel from you.
Yeah.
And it's easier to do all that wiring when you don't have to worry about that deck being there. I mean, and the plumbing for the live well.
Yeah.
You know, being able to connect that live well, being able to hide all those wires, suspend those wires up off the floor and stuff like that. So once I got all that done, I wanted to make sure it, you know, it worked. Everything worked. I tested stuff two or three times. I went ahead and started doing the fabrication for the deck.
Mm-hmm.
Got that done. And then I brought it back to you guys to get scanned for sea deck.
Yep. Now, did you put the live well in, or did we do that?
So you guys had put the live – when you put the hatch in, the live well was already in. The hatches were already in when I got it from you guys.
Okay.
So that you guys had already –
so we just didn't do the plumbing.
You didn't – no, you did the plumbing on the live well. The live well was plumbed. Yeah, it was plumbed.
Okay.
The only thing that wasn't done was the live well switch wasn't in.
The timer, yeah.
The timer wasn't in. And the auto recert,
the
three-way valve was not in with the core, with the cable that goes through to the. So I had to, but everything else was in.
Gotcha. It's been a while since we did.
It has been.
So I did, and this is kind of probably overkill, which was, I think a lot of what I did probably overkill, but that's okay. I'm happy with it. I did buy some decking, and I know that you guys did a video, I think, one time on the Amazon decking that you bought.
Oh, yeah.
But I did buy the cheap Amazon decking that's similar to the sea deck that I bought, and I put it in the bottom of my boat, like in the areas. I mean, it's nobody's going to see it.
Inside the compartments, right?
It's inside the compartments, right? So I put some in the main hatch in the front. There's some in the back where the gas can or the gas tank and the battery are.
Yeah.
And the only other thing that I did do was I did insulate my live well.
Okay.
So I did go back and put the big, thick, inch and a quarter pink sheeting,
the foam
sheeting all the way around it, and I slid a piece underneath it that's on both sides of the drain where the drain's on the bottom,
right?
And I wrapped it in that the ductwork type stuff that you see in houses,
that aluminum type
the
tape.
Aluminum tape.
Yeah,
did that. It works as a beer cooler. I never put fish in it. That's I mean, awesome. It's, you can, I can put it in there and put a case of beer in there and dump ice in it. And
yeah, absolutely.
When I'm done with it, if I want to drain it when I get out, I just turn the drain on it and it dumps it out.
That's what I would do with a lot of
I mean, it's just, everything I catch is released. I just throw it back. Yeah.
But you did it, you know, just in case you decide to do tournaments or something later
on.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because when you were building your boat, you were talking about doing tournaments. And right. You're like, well, I don't know. And I got to finish my boat. And
yeah.
So it's good to have.
It is. I mean, it's, you know, if I ever decide that, you know, I'm going to move, do something different or do a different project or something like that, you know, the next person who takes that boat and, you know, hopefully has it for the next 10, 15 years, you know, if they want to fish tournaments, it's got it, right? And the live well works.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know. It's a good selling point.
Yeah, it is. So I think if I were going to do something different about that boat, and you guys are probably going to, this is probably going to be gnashing of teeth when I say this, I probably would have put a rod locker in it. And I'll tell you
some
why.
Some people like them, some people don't.
And I'll tell you why. Because usually when I go to the lake, and I don't go directly home after I go to the lake.
Yeah.
And I don't want to drop the tailgate on the truck, take all the rods off the truck, throw them in the bed, make sure nothing's bent up in there, shut the tailgate. You know, just being able to have something where you could stick some rods or having another compartment that you could put a nav light in the back.
Yeah.
You don't have to secure that down to the deck. And just if you wanted to be able to lock them up, you got a spot to lock them up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think about that a lot, especially in my boat. But I just leave it out. test the waters. And it,
well, that's
nothing
the way I
yet.
Do.
But
I just park wherever I'm going. If I'm going to a restaurant, I park. I sit in a restaurant where I know I can see my truck.
Right? Yeah.
And my boat.
All right, so Ryan, what'd you think about the standard release Bill Mead?
I think I would. I mean, honestly, I would drink that pretty regularly.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go to Tennessee.
Well, dude, that's y'all's bottle. Keep it.
Yeah. I mean, that's thank you.
Yeah, man.
So now we get to take it home and share it. Like, this you take it one night, I'll take it the next night.
We get work in custody.
Ooh, that's probably a little much.
It's all good, dude. That is my favorite right
so
there.
So what can you tell us about this stuff?
Go visit. I mean, I'm dead serious. Like, it is one of the most impressive stories I think I've ever heard. So the guy who started it was a German immigrant, came to the United States in the late 1800s, 15 years old, ends up in Nashville, starts a grocery store in Nashville, starts distilling whiskey in the back of the grocery store. And his wife is a lady by the name of Louisa. When Prohibition, he died just before Prohibition.
Okay.
When Prohibition hit, she took any barrels and bottles that they had, and they got it out of the city and found some sort of barn somewhere in Tennessee, north of Nashville, and they hid all these barrels.
Holy cow.
And so I mentioned a little earlier, this is old number five.
Yeah.
So the great-grandsons of Charles Nelson had visited Nashville, and they were visiting a butcher somewhere in Nashville, and he pointed out across the street where the old warehouse that their great grandfather had built. So when they went over and visited, there was a lady there because it's on the National Historic Register, mm-hmm. and she says, "Well, I've got two bottles of this," and they were like mesmerized. So they actually had it reverse engineered to figure out what the recipe was.
That's great.
And it's just an incredible story. I can't do the story justice. I would encourage you the next time you have an opportunity to visit Nashville and you got time, go do the tour. It's so worth it.
It's pretty cool.
Is it in like downtown Nashville?
It's just north of Nashville. So it's on the Titans Stadium side town, north of Titans Stadium.
Dude, that is beautiful.
So this one's called The Reserve. It's 108.3.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's really good.
Very good.
Yeah.
It's everything that bottle is, just like amped up to 1,000.
Yeah.
It's
I like it, man. It's really good.
It's really good. I have only seen this in store one time, but it was not either one of these two. It was something else. But I remember that name because I was like, I've never heard of this distillery before. Where in the hell is it from?
Well, did you see it here in Georgia or did you see it up in Kentucky?
Yeah, I saw it at the Sigmund store.
Really?
Yeah.
So at the beginning of 2024, they stopped distributing in Georgia. So they don't distribute to Georgia anymore. So if you want to get it now, you got to go to Chattanooga to get it.
Yeah.
So
the Sigma store is in Conyers, and they have like a little bit of everything.
I mean, they may be able to get it for you if you ask.
They may still have some out there. I don't remember what bottle. I just remember the name, the Bell Mead. And I was like, what in the hell is that? I ain't never heard of this before.
So there's an actual plantation, I think, in the Nashville area called Bell Mead Plantation. But okay. I don't think it's related. I think it's just kind of that name. So, but it is by far. I haven't always been a big bourbon drinker. It's something that I've acquired, you know, over time as I became an older adult. It didn't treat me well in my 20s. yeah. Mainly my college years.
I get it.
But it is, I'd rather have that when the weather gets like it is, you know, it's in the 60s.
You want to start warming up a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's got a sweet cherry bomb to it that I absolutely love.
I'm getting a little bit of that spice kick to it too, but it's not like anything crazy.
It's just got a little hint of black pepper.
Yeah, it's very comforting.
But it's a very sweet brown sugary vanilla type background to it, but it's a heavy, heavy cherry, and I really like it. It's very good. When you did the distillery tour, did they tell you what the age statement on this stuff is?
They didn't. They may have, but I can't remember.
Okay.
Because I did the tour. So the first time I did the tour twice. So the first time I did the tour, it was like, have you guys ever been to Sweetwater Brewery in Atlanta?
No, I've never been there. What's that one in Athens? I've been to that one.
Terrapin.
Okay.
So you know how when some of these breweries or distilleries kind of like they first kind of come onto the scene, their operations are really small.
Yeah. Right?
So the first time I did the tour, the operation was really small. So I went back a year ago, and I didn't do the tour that time. But when I went back, their operation had grown probably 10 to 12 fold.
Oh, wow.
They had created a restaurant. They had, you know, a tasting room that was specific for tasting. They had a restaurant where they had, you know, people could go in there and eat brunch. You could eat dinner, eat lunch, whatever. They've got their own chefs. It's really, really incredible. It's called Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. It's not called Bell Mead. Bell Mead is the name of the bourbon. They have a Nelson Brothers bourbon. And I mentioned a little earlier, his wife's name was Louisa.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a coffee liqueur. Dude.
Good.
Oh, man. You can drink that stuff, and it'll slip up on you. You get up and like, I gotta go to the bathroom, and you're like, whoa, what was that?
That's when you know it's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really good. I mean, and I say kids, our kids, you know, their ages are 16 to 29, almost 30, but, you know, that some of the older ones like it because it's like not, it's not harsh like they feel like bourbon can be. And so it's easier for them to drink. So, it's not bad.
It's good. I'm definitely going to. Definitely been keeping that one on the radar. I want to do some more research on it, find out some more about it. It's a really good bottle.
Yeah, it's really good.
So back to your boat.
Yes, sir.
Let's see, where did we leave off at before we went on a bourbon journey? Your wiring.
Mm-hmm.
Let
me tell you what I did for wiring, though. Okay. Because I would have done this again, absolutely. So I used tinned copper wiring to prevent any kind of corrosion or anything like that on terminal connections.
Yep.
I literally used heat. I actually started out with heat shrink connections, but then I switched away from that pretty quick and just went to the crimped connections. And then I used shrink wrap over top of them.
Yep.
Just to keep any water out, because the water is the enemy. And my dad was a contractor, my grandfather was a contractor. I learned a lot from those guys about doing projects and that sort of thing, but my dad and my grandfather always told me, and it doesn't matter if it's boats, houses, whatever it is, if water can find a way in, it will find a way in.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It will, especially on boats.
Absolutely.
So you did tin copper wiring,
yeah.
And then you did, so you started with the crimp connectors that have the heat shrink built in.
Correct.
And then you're just like, screw this, I'm just going to use the regular connectors.
Yeah, I think I probably did maybe four or five connections on it, and my next door neighbor, Justin, who's a really good friend of mine, he and I help each other out a ton. Everybody needs a friend like him. Dude, I'm telling you, the dude knows everything. He's like, man, why don't you try the crimped connections where you use like an actual crimping tool and crimp it down? He goes, I think it might be better. And so that's what I did, but I just made sure I put heat shrink. But make sure you put your heat shrink on first, then do your connection, then slide the heat shrink over the crimp.
Yeah, if not, you'll be cutting that crimp off and then put a heat shrink on.
That's exactly right.
After you cuss and throw something across the garage.
That's right.
They're done that.
It's like when you're wearing a Carolina or doing a rigging a Carolina rig, right? You do your egg weight first, and then your bead, and then your stopper, and then you tie your swivel on.
Yep, been there, done that.
Or you tie your swivel on the leader, and then go back and tie it onto the to the main line.
Yeah. So you got all your wiring pretty much handled. You didn't have any issues.
No, I had zero.
I don't remember any phone calls where it was like, "Oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to burn this boat down and call insurance company."
Yeah, no, dude, not at all. I mean, it's funny. I mentioned Justin a little earlier. He, I would tell him, I'm like, "Hey, dude, listen, I need you to come next door to him for a second, because I do have idiot tendencies. I just want to make sure that I'm not doing this wrong." And then, like, you know, kind of once you get the hang of it, it's like wash, rinse, repeat, wash, rinse, repeat, wash, rinse, repeat, right? Just make sure that, you know, you connect a red to a red and a black to a black, not a red to a black.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's not going to end up well.
Yeah, it doesn't. If someone's going to go pow, or you're going to see flames.
Yeah, yeah. Have that fire extinguisher handy.
So and then the last and final piece of your build was the turf and the motor, and you went the route that we try to tell people all the time is the easiest route, but nobody ever listens to us because I know it's expensive. But you got us to scan your boat and do the turf.
Yeah.
What was the level of ease of your turf install,
bro? If my boat build had been as easy as that turf project was, I mean, I remember when we were talking about it, you're like, dude, it's like Liz and Frank stick book? What was it?
Yeah,
Frank stick book, right?
Yeah.
You're not joking, dude. It was an image of my boat, and it showed you where to put every beef. And I will tell you this, it is the most, I mean, when I get on that boat, I usually fish in flip-flops. I take my flip-flops off. I never put them back on until I get out of that boat because it is so comfortable. It's easy. And I don't profess to have back problems, and I don't. But it is easy on your back. You're walking on aluminum and aluminum framing, but it gives you a level of cushioning, I think. Mm-hmm. It's easy to clean.
Yeah.
Dawn dish detergent and a little water.
That's what I use.
Cleans it right up. I would have done that. I cannot stress that enough. I absolutely would do that again. It was well worth the investment.
We have a lot of people ask us, they're like, "Well, I got to buy 4 or 5 sheets of turf for my boat. I'm going to spend $800 or $900." And I'm like, well, spend the extra whatever it is, whether it's $1,000, $1,500 or whatever, to get it cut. Because not only, one, it looks amazing. Two, it just makes the install a breeze.
Oh, dude.
And I always forget about it, too, because we do a lot of custom turf boats. Every now and then, we'll get somebody that wants a piece of turf put in, and we have to cut it by hand. And I forget how bad it sucks until we get one of those boats in, and I'm like, oh, my God. And just trying to line it all up, just trying to make sure all the guesswork is taken out of it. It's just it comes in a box, and you pull the piece of paper out, and go, okay, this piece goes here, this piece goes here, and just start peeling and sticking it. It's literally that easy.
Well, and the other thing too is like you got to be thinking ahead, right? If you know that I have that light bar on the front we talked about earlier, right? Yep. Well, if you're gonna mount a trolling motor, if you're gonna mount a trolling motor on there, right?
Yeah.
You can't put that trolling motor onto the turf's on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you got to run your wiring or be able to run the wiring after you've put the turf on.
Yep.
So you got to think ahead. You got to do a lot of really good planning. So the only advice I think I would give people is, don't be so anxious that you make a mistake and you regret it after the fact. Slow down. Think this thing through. You know, do your research. Talk to these guys. I cannot tell you, you guys are a source of information because you do this every day.
Yes. Right?
I mean, it's just not, building a boat is not my, 8 to 5. That's what you guys do for a living. This is your business. So if you got a question, ask these guys. You guys are great at what you do. And there's a reason that I feel like my boat build was successful. And it's no doubt because of both of you. So
I'm glad we could help.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you took our advice more times than you did.
I did. There were many times that when I called you, I knew which way I wanted to head, and you changed my mind. Mm-hmm. And it made me second guess it. And I'll tell you, one was in the planning process, Dude, I had so many hatches in that boat. I mean, and I think that it was Ryan that was like, dude, you don't need all these hatches.
Yeah. Let's simplify that a little bit.
Yeah. You need one place to store all your gear, and if it's big enough, you don't need all these other hatches.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I've got a ton of wasted space in my boat.
Right.
I really don't. I mean, it's. I think that the space is pretty well utilized. There might be a spot here or there, but, I mean, at the end of the day, I can raise that hatch and get everything I need out of it and with no problem.
So now that you've had the boat finished for a while and you've had some time to fish on it, tell me some things you like about it now that it's finished, and then I want to talk about things that you would do differently or things that you wish you could change.
So it's good for two people or less. I fish a lot by myself. I love the fact that it's small enough that I can store it pretty easily. I think it's heavy. I think I mentioned that a little earlier, but it's obviously 50 years old, so it's a little heavier aluminum. But, you know, there's ways around that. Just make sure you get the appropriate size motor. I think if there's one thing, and I'm kind of jumping around a little bit here, but I think if there was one thing that was a little different is I would have taken my time, and you guys mentioned this on another podcast recently, was thinking ahead, or I think it was the 11 mistakes or 10 mistakes or something like that podcast, was making sure that you measure your transom and make sure your motor size is appropriate, because I thought I'd gotten a really good deal on a two-stroke Evinrude, and it was a regular shaft motor, and I got almost a 20 and a half inch transom.
Yeah. Right?
And so I took that thing and put it in Altoona for the first time, and I normally fish in the air, but I put it in Altoona, and I think it's like, sound like a kid's water boat, like you put it in a bathtub or whatever, because half the prop's out of the water.
Yep.
Because, you know, but just because of it was a regular shaft motor and I needed a long shaft, but I fixed that problem since then. I mentioned a little earlier about the rod locker thing. I think that's personal preference. I really can't think of anything that I would really do a whole lot different.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. After seeing your turf was the first one we'd ever done in that, like, digital
camo.
Yours was a different color, though, that we had never done before.
And it was that mocha color on the bottom.
Yeah, but it was the desert camo over the top.
Yeah,
man, that thing looks so good. You're
with the monster liner that you did though.
Yeah, because I picked a khaki monster liner.
I love the way your boat looks.
Yeah.
Like, I tried my hardest to do that.
Well, it's so funny. It's so funny when I saw your video of your boat or whatever.
Yeah.
I texted Chris. I'm like, somebody's got a boat that looks a lot like mine.
I tried.
You remember that?
Yep. Well, and we wanted to do his because, so yours is C-Deck, and when HydroTurf came around, they were telling us about doing the custom camo colors over, you know, whatever you want. We'd never had that option before with HydroTurf, using your boat as an inspiration, he's like, well, what if we did cobblestone over black, and it kind of look like Trey's boat? And I'm like, it kind of would. It'd be, I don't know. Both y'all's boats turned out really, really good.
But, yeah, mine's just a different shade of everything and all that. But,
dude, I'll tell you something. There's something about your boat that I like.
Mm-hmm.
If my memory serves me correctly, I like how you got some of your switches in the front for your operations in the front.
So, you know, I don't remember your bow plate, but we did – well, because I wanted that cooler up front.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a nightmare. Say the least.
I'm not going to say it was a nightmare. It was just a lot of us sitting around going, how do we make this work?
Yeah.
Like, I got the when you came to me and you were like, we're going to put a cooler up here. And I'm like, are you retarded? Like, what is wrong with you? Like, how? I don't even know how I can make that work. You're like, no, dude, it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. We're going to do this. And I'm sitting there looking at it and I'm like, I don't even know where to begin framing this. I pulled out a protractor and like 9 pieces of scrap aluminum, and we just started like using
piecemealing it together.
Well, we had a bunch of little spring clamps, and we were like spring clamping stuff together, drawing all over stuff with Sharpies. And I'm like, let's just try it. I don't know if it's going to work or not. Yeah. And we did, and it ended up working really good.
Yeah.
But it was actually an afterthought. Like, after we got the front end built,
Because then the bow plate was in two pieces.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you had the right side on the side of the cooler and then the left where the trolling motor was going to be.
Right.
I was like, dude, we need to do something with this odd angle that's going to end up coming out of here. Like,
yeah.
What can we put the switches there? You think that'll work?
So we busted out some switch panels and we started measuring it. And I'm like, I think it'll fit. It might
fit.
Dude,
I like that a lot.
It may not fit.
I like it operational wise.
Oh, no
question.
Like,
I'm right there at the front.
It's very functional.
Oh, man. And when I get out of the truck, it's just right there. It's the first thing I get to when I walk back to the truck.
Correct.
On, power on,
yep.
Switches.
Yeah.
Now, do you put yours in the cockpit?
So my switch panel is in the cockpit, right? But what I wish I would have done, this is you raise a very good point. What I wish I would have done is for my trolling motor batteries. So when you open my hatch, it has framing in the back of the hatch area. My batteries, I can get to them, no problem. It's not going to be fun, but I can get to them. They're just on the other side of that framing.
We did his the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You can get to them, but you got to get inside the boat.
Yeah, it's not going to be fun for about 20 minutes, so you get them all, get the terminals off.
Yeah.
So I would have put my main switch for those batteries is in that compartment, like right there. If I'd have done it over, I'd have put it on the switch panel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because that way you switch the accessories on, you switch the trolling motors on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm about to do that for my boat. I can't wait. I'm so tired of having to climb inside my boat to get to all my switches. I can't wait.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I've gotten some really strange looks because I've got flashlights on the outside of it.
Yeah.
Dude, I'll turn all those lights on, and if it's usually when I go fishing, it's like dark in the mornings when I get out on the water, and there's other guys at the boat, and I'm like, other guys at the boat ramp, and they're just like, what is that?
Those flashlights make your boat look like a UFO.
Well, dude, it was funny. I was fishing out in Altoona one time, and Justin, my neighbor, met me out there at Altoona because he had to come back early, and I said, did you have any problem? Did you have any? He's like, no, dude. When I came across the bridge, I saw your boat. You couldn't miss it. Did you put a rod locker in yours?
No.
You didn't?
I did the, I don't even have catwalks, really. I mean, no. I do, but they're like 6 inches. But the, my rods go into just openings. I drilled into that, the vertical wall.
Yeah.
And just feed them in there. I leave them completely open out, like, I don't worry about them.
I wish, even if I did that, like, even if I had that, I wish I had something to get them off the deck.
Yes.
You know?
Now, my issue is we went way too wide with that front hatch.
Did you?
So now when I have all those rods out on my deck, I got to, like, scoot them over every time just to open up that lid.
He's only got about that much room on each side of the hatch. That's where the edge of the boat is.
I've got maybe 6 or 8 inches.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of tight. I mean, there have been times where I've had the hatch up, and then when I go to put it down, I'm like, oh, we got to move that rod out of the way. Yep,
I have to do that consistently. But
it's, you know, I mean, you're dealing with a 1648, right? You're not dealing with a 21-foot boat or, you know. I mean, so you have to learn to manage it. But I think if you do the thorough thought and planning.
I would like to make a point on that because I think that's something that you get when you build your own boat, mm-hmm. right? Like you have that mentality like, okay, like your first thought is like, well, I am in a 16-foot boat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like space is going to be tight. I got what I got, but I have all this other stuff like where your compromises come in and out of. You know, cause then if we just build your boat for you and something doesn't come out right, like you're like, man, fuck this. This doesn't work right. Like, those guys don't know what they're doing. It's like, no, it's not that. There's some give and take here.
Yeah.
There really is. And for me, like, I shouldn't have gone that wide on that lid, and now I know. But I don't know. I just feel like you're a little more understanding of those things when you build your own boat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As opposed to when you have someone build your boat. So.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to have a rod locker in my boat. So all I do is catfish out of my boat.
Yeah.
And my catfish rods take up a lot of space.
Sure.
Now, when I built my catwalks, I got enough room to store 3 rods mm-hmm. up underneath the catwalk. But I wanted as much floor space as I could get because I knew I was going to be sitting like right in the middle of the back of the boat.
Right.
So that's why I didn't take up that extra space with the rod lockers. But I tell you, my next boat is going to be extra, extra wide, and I'm going to have a rod locker in it because those rods take up so much space.
Well, and you just said something you were talking about width of the boat and stuff like that. So you know, obviously I run a tiller handle, right? Yeah. So what's interesting about that boat is the cockpit in my boat sits just enough forward where you're having to lean back a little bit to run yep. that tiller handle.
We so, run into that on a lot of boats.
So I put an extension handle on it.
Yeah.
So I can stand up just outside the cockpit and run the tiller handle.
Yeah.
Or I can stand in the cockpit and run the tiller handle. Either way.
That's one of those, unless you're willing to move your live well up to the front of the right. boat and have just a gigantic front deck and a teeny tiny little back deck, which a lot of people are not willing to do because right. they want to have a person back there fishing, and yeah, they sure. want them to have
absolutely.
You're that's one thing that you have to give up mm-hmm. when you're going to run a tiller handle is you may have to sit way back on the back deck and kind of lean back a little bit in order yeah. to run it. But
yeah.
the only way you're going to have enough room in your back hatch to put batteries in a gas tank, plus all your live well plumbing mm-hmm. and all the other stuff that goes back mm-hmm. in the back
insulation
of the boat,
if you're going to insulate it,
yeah, is if you move that back deck a little bit more forward, and you're just kind of uncomfortable when you're driving it sometimes.
You know, I like I said, I bought that extension handle, and it's fine. It's fine. It's no problem. I mean, it's, you know, standing up on the back deck and running the tiller handle it's fine. So that would be. It's kind of nitpicking a little bit, right? If I had to do something a little different, I'd maybe yeah. make that back deck maybe 4 to 6 inches shorter.
Yeah.
You know?
Or put a little notch out in it, yeah. kind of like a lot of the newer boats are coming with, like the Havocs.
Like a step yeah. up or
either
something
a step
like that.
Or just something to kind of pull it back mm-hmm. a little bit.
But yeah. if you do go electric, you're going to be glad that you have those 4 inches for your rear compartment for
oh,
the
I'm
batteries.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So
well, that brings up a good point. So you started out with a two-stroke short shaft motor, yeah, which wound up being too short. Yeah. I remember the panic phone call. I'm like, this thing's not going to work. I don't
this
know
is not working, dude.
You were thinking about like
I
taking
can't
a
get it on the trailer
and like putting it upside
I
down.
I sound like a tugboat.
So then you end up selling it, and then what did you get?
So, dude, I bought a 9.9 Suzuki long shaft, and then I bought a jack plate to put it on.
You got the on-the-fly jack plate?
I bought the on-the-fly jack plate.
Both of y'all got them now.
Dude, it's a great jack
plate. Dude, I'm telling you, bro. That thing, and this thing's got electric. This 9.9, don't sleep on it. It's got electric start and tilt, baby.
So what? We were talking earlier, you did some mods to it. What all did you do?
So just swap the ECM out, which I don't recommend. That will void your warranty. I swapped the ECM out and the breather. So now it's a 20.
That's awesome. I want one now. What is it? All right. So what is your boat speed wise do with that setup now?
So before it topped out at a whopping 5.7 miles per
Sounds
hour.
About right.
Yeah.
Wait, a regular 9.9 got at 5.7.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was on a short shaft. It was like
No. That's a long shaft.
Oh, that was a long shaft?
Because the Evinrude was 25.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right. I'm following now.
The Evinrude was 25.
Wow.
So swapping the ECM out and swapping the breather out, it now does right at 14.8.
That's not bad.
No, dude, I'll take it, man.
Not for a 9.9.
Is that enough to get you on a plane?
No, it's
a little shy.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm glad you guys brought this up because, you know, I've toyed with the idea of putting float pods on the back of it
mm-hmm.
just to give it a little more buoyancy in the back, and maybe it will, maybe it won't. But, dude, that boat's so heavy, man. I don't know that it'll make a difference.
If you were going to a bigger motor, I would say yes.
No question. Probably. If but, I was going to 25 or greater.
Yeah.
25 to maybe 50.
If it was me, I would oversize it. I would do like a 50 or a 60 and put float pods on it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's definitely get up on plane, no problem.
I've never been one that's been sane, so. So all right, so that's what you're running now, but yeah. you're planning on going electric.
I may go. I'm toying with the idea of going electric, simply because I live. You guys have fished this thing on that Hollis Latham
you're
reservoir.
Oh yeah, I was up there this weekend.
Yeah, it's right by my house.
Really?
Like literally, I'm. So you come down Yellow Creek Road, turn left on 369.
Yeah,
I'm like 5 miles down the road on the left.
Dude, that's crazy.
And I'm right there. Like I can be at that reservoir in 10 minutes.
Yeah. That's a beautiful place, by the way.
You know, it's interesting, but I have not caught a single fish out of that place.
Well, you don't need to leave the boat ramp, to be honest with you.
You don't, but, you know, there's a ton of timber, broken off, snapped off timber in there.
Yeah.
That sticks up above the water, and that is a largemouth haven.
Yeah.
But I have not caught a single
fish. So I was there this weekend.
Did you catch anything?
If you go to that far side, just those main points.
Go past the dam. And
no, well, not you don't even have to go past the dam. I mean, it was this was all happening right across from the dam, yep. opposite side.
Okay.
They had to have been like, I'm going to say anywhere from 5 to 8 pound bass.
Shut your mouth.
Crushing the top of the, like pushing these big old, like.
Bait balls up, push them up.
Big bait balls, pushing them straight up to the top and just destroying, like. Free Willy freaking coming out of the water, like destroying them,
breaching the water.
Sound like you would hear them before you saw where they were at, and you would just hear the. Oh man,
probably sound like Striper.
Yeah, it did. Which it,
which like
actually,
is this
I don't know
about?
If there's Striper up there or not.
No. There's no Striper in there.
I don't think there is.
No.
But dude, it was insane.
Which lake is this?
This is Latham.
Latham yeah. Reservoir, right there.
I've never been up there.
It's a Cherokee County watershed. So it's off Yellow Creek Road.
And they manage it very well. There's a guy that works in that, and they if
he's
you,
really
if you
cool
get a tagged fish, like he's got all the data on that fish. Like
really?
Yeah.
The only issue that I've had there is that they have feeders out there.
They do?
Yeah. So when you put in the ramp, right?
Yeah.
And you go back, don't go towards the dam.
Okay.
Go to the left, where all the timber is back over in there.
Right.
If you look to the left, I don't know if it's the watershed authorities feeders or the people who live right there on that hill they put a feeder down there.
Right there
there's a feeder out there and I was like this there's no use because if this thing's going off once or twice a day
right
you're not going to catch anything right in here
they're already trained to come to there
they probably hear that thing go off and they go there's a guy I watch on YouTube sometimes called he runs a channel called Bama Bass you ever seen that dude
I watch him every
dude
like,
I watch
I love his
what
channel.
Does that guy do
so he used to he had an online tackle store.
Okay.
That was kind of like how he started.
Okay.
But he's known for like him. He used to go out and catch like 10 pounders, like before it was cool. Before like everyone started doing panoptics and everything.
Yeah.
Like he was doing it pre all that stuff. And he was just going out in Alabama and like he was really into the biology of them all.
Yeah.
Which is now you look at his channel now and you're like, okay, that makes a ton of sense, you know.
Yeah.
But back then, it was just him, and then I think he like started messing around with a fish tank, and then it evolved into like, all right, I'm gonna put a backyard pond in, and it was like, well, we outgrew the backyard pond. Let's just buy a bunch of land and put a 5-acre pond out there, and then he outgrew that and built the
5-acre pond.
Well, the 5-acre pond, then and now he's got the one that's feeding down into the 5-acre pond.
Yeah, he's got that little pond where he's put all those plants and stuff like that.
Yeah, and he's kind of like testing a bunch of stuff out in that little pond.
Yeah,
but dude, that's a phenomenal channel. I love watching.
There's a buddy of mine that I went to college with. He lives in South Carolina, and that's what he does.
Really?
So, did you ever see the episode of you know Shaquille O'Neal lives like Noonan, Stockbridge, kind of that area?
Yep.
Okay, so he had a huge koi pond.
The pond guys came in there.
Yeah. So my buddy Jay
that
I graduated with, he came from South Carolina along with some other guys, and they redid that pond.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of interesting. It's fascinating. I told April, I was like, I want to put one of these fish tanks in my office and like catch a striped bass or whatever, or get a minnow bass or whatever and throw it in there.
Yeah.
So then you'll get a kick out of this. So right there on 369, there's a pond on the right when you're going back towards 400.
Okay.
So when you're leaving Yellow Creek or you're leaving Latham, do you come back Brownsbridge?
Usually I take a right out of Latham and then go up, take a left.
Okay.
But so I have come in that back way too.
So if you come out of Latham, take a right.
Yeah.
Go past Riverbend Gun Club to the left.
Okay.
Go to the stop sign.
Yeah.
Turn left.
Yeah.
That takes you down that road all the way, and you come out on 369.
Right.
If you turn left, it takes you back to 400.
Okay. That's the way I come in.
Okay.
When I leave, I go past that big park down there that's on a little flat land. There's like, there ain't shit in that park. Like, not a tree, nothing.
Okay.
But, yes, coming in, I come through 400, yeah.
Okay. So if you come back that way on the right across from our neighborhood, there's a pond over there.
Okay.
It's like 2 acres. I told April, I'm like, spring of the year, I'm going to stock that pond. I'm going to stock that pond. She's like, why would you do that? And I'm like, I actually did the research. I went online and looked at it. I'm like, I can buy 50 tiger bass, 250 bluegill. I can put some tilapia in there to eat the algae.
Mm-hmm.
And I can buy, you know, 1,000 to, you know, 2,500 fathead minnows and throw them mm-hmm. in there. And just, I had to feed them on the regular and that sort of thing. But I'm like, how nice would it be able to hop in the Ranger, ride right across the street, wet a line right there, and you can catch a 5 or 6 pound bass in a couple of years?
That'd be cute.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's any structure in it. You know, you're going to have structure. That guy, Obama Bass, yeah. he's outfitted that thing. It's incredible. That guy's living somebody else, many people's dreams.
Dude, he's got trackers in the water, and the bass that are tagged, like, he knows where they're at and where they're going past this tracker.
Yeah.
And it sends him a full data sheet.
Well, it's kind of like those trackers they use on Shark Week.
Yeah, it's yeah. very similar, but like, that pings off a satellite.
An acoustic tracker or yeah. whatever.
Right.
Yeah. That theirs pings off a satellite. This is in the water. It's submerged in the water. So
it's like
a
ring.
Yeah, so when they swim by it, it picks up the code on their tag. He's got an Excel spreadsheet where he had a naming contest for viewers where they could name the bass, like A through Z. And when he catches one, he spends like, what, the last 5-7 minutes of the pot of his Dude. Video catching
yeah.
bass?
Yeah.
And then he'll pull it out. He'll scan it, see if it's been – if it's got a pit tag, right?
Yeah.
So he'll measure it and weigh it, and then he's got where he's caught some of those fish like 4 or 5 times, and you can see over like a 2-year period how much weight and how much length those fish have grown.
That's crazy.
And you can start to see what year they were in or if they were like reproduced after the stocking and stuff like that. So like his original ones that are in there, I forgot how he did it. But you can tell when it's a newer fish, like because now it's generational because it's been a couple years.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Is
he's got
really
way
cool.
too much time on his hands.
Well, that's what he does. I
mean, he's got way too much money on his
yeah.
hands.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's nice. Doing that now, like managing that property. That's his job, I'm assuming. But
it's insane. I mean, he has we're going to hunt his hunting land.
Yeah.
He's got some monster bucks out there.
Yeah.
It's an old peanut farm.
Oh, well, yeah.
They're out there eating peanuts. But
South Alabama.
Yep.
South Alabama.
But but going back to what would I do different, there's not a whole lot I would really do different. I feel like I took my time with the wiring. I feel like I took my time with the decking, with the paint. You know, just when I thought I'd sanded enough, I sanded a little more. You know, I didn't bear down real hard on it and that sort of thing. But I just wanted like a really, really smooth mm-hmm. bottom on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, outside of that, I mean, I'm happy with everything all the way down to the deck cleats. I'm happy with them.
Yeah.
You know, it's done well. I've never had any issues. The only issue is, and it's y'all's tagline, don't forget the drain plug. I did back it in one time, forgot to put the drain plug in.
We all have.
I got in the boat, and I'm like, oh, no. The boat's filling up with water. I had to flip the bilge on, and I'm like trying to stick the plug back in. Water's pouring in the boat.
At least you didn't do it on video like I did. I did it on Patrick's boat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
When we finished the Weekend Warrior build,
yeah,
we took it out. We had already filmed the video for the Tiny Boat Nation channel, but I was going to do a video on my channel. We were going to run a mud motor on it. We take it out to the lake, drop it in the water, get in. At the dock, and I'm like, man, the back end of that boat just kind of looks like it's
it's listing the ones.
It's like lean. It's got a gangsta lean on it. I was like, what the hell's going on with this boat? I jumped in, and as soon as I jumped in the boat, I heard, and I was like, oh, that's not good.
Something's wet.
Bring the trailer. Bring the trailer. The whole back of the boat was full of water.
I caught mine pretty quickly because my son-in-law was actually, pulling the boat out or pulling the trailer and trucking the trailer out. And then I caught it like literally like I'm like right at the ramp and I hadn't backed away and gone to the dock or anything like that. So I was able to like pull back up a little bit and get out and be up on the ramp and then walk around to the back. Thankfully it was in the summertime, the water was freezing cold. And I turned the bilge on and shoved the plug in there and turned it on. So there was a little water poured out of it at the end when we pulled it out. But,
man.
You know, outside of that, I mean, I'm pretty pleased with my boat. I mean, I cannot thank you guys enough for the guidance. If anybody's going to build a boat, you know, it's better to ask questions.
Yeah.
On the front end, and take your time. Don't be so anxious to get it in the water.
Yeah.
you know, I started building mine. I think I picked the boat up from you guys like right after New Year's.
Yeah.
And I think I finally put it in the water maybe. I think it took me about 4 months, and I put it in the water just – but that was working on the weekends. And I put it in just before Mother's Day.
Yeah.
So right at the end
you,
of April.
I mean, you hammered away on it pretty quick.
Yeah.
You did a lot of work in a short period of time. Yep. So, but in all honesty, you took the two hardest parts of boat building and was just like, here, y'all do this.
Yeah.
The framing is not difficult. It's just the most time consuming, and it's the one that hurts your brain the most, because tedious. You're like, I don't even know where to start with the first yeah. piece. Like, where does the deck height need to be at?
Well, it's just, these,
you know, there's a lot that goes into it.
Just trying to, and for some people, this will drive them insane, trying to find a square edge.
Yeah, I'll do that. You're not going to find it.
It's not going to happen.
No.
But it will. Some people will go insane just looking for that. So. Yeah.
But that and the turfing or carpeting or whatever you decide to do, the flooring that you put in your boat, those are the two most time-consuming and, like, biggest headaches.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people say electrical is, but it's easy for me.
Yeah. No, electrical is – once you do a few electrical connections and you kind of start your confidence starts building a little bit, if you slow down and think about it, and you'll be fine with the electrical. Yeah. That didn't concern me at all. I mean, I've done some other smaller – electrical projects, not house related,
yeah,
but like UTV related and stuff like that. And I'm like, it came right back to the wiring of the boat.
There's so many videos too,
yeah,
online now. Yeah. We've got a few. You've got some on your channel. Anthony's got a bunch. Mike's
probably
got a bunch.
Make some more, to be honest with you.
We're going to do some smaller, you know, like individual stuff on video. But for the most part, I think that the overall broad spectrum of boat wiring is out there on YouTube.
Yeah,
somebody's got a video on it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, outside of that, I think the only thing that if I were to do something different, I might have gone with a little bit bigger boat.
Yes, yeah. We all would have done that.
I mean, if you could find like an 18-foot John boat.
Yeah.
Like an 1854 or an 1860.
I think wider is better size than longer.
Or brand or maker, yeah. Right? You have a 1648. That's like a 1648 class boat is a pretty great boat to do all this
mm-hmm.
stuff with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, mine's a Fisher, whereas yours is a Tracker.
Right.
Mine is much wider in the front mm-hmm. than yours is. So
right.
you have a little bit more room and flexibility there yeah. in that way. So just, you know.
Yeah.
It does depend on the manufacturer sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, your boat feels huge up front compared to, like, mine and yours and a lot of people yeah. that have a Tracker style.
Mine's boat. Abnormal.
Yes.
It really is for
his is like, you know, the width in the middle is the same almost all the way up to the front. And then like at the last second, like right where the trolling motor started, it just goes.
Dude, yeah, it's only like a foot and a half and then it starts tapering.
That's really?
It. Yeah. Yeah. It's 52 awesome, or whatever the whole way up to the front.
That's pretty awesome. April and I were fishing one day and she's standing on the front. And I had I use the remote a lot when I'm by myself because I can stand in the back of the boat and operate the remote and operate the trolling motor. Right. And so a lot of times since that thing's touchscreen.
Yeah.
If I've got a hanging around my neck, it'll spin around and it'll bump my chest and it'll, you know, autopilot will kick on or true north or whatever will kick on. So she's standing on the front of the boat and she's getting hung up with a buzz bait or whatever. And that, and when I, the remote swung around, it hit it and the autopilot kicked on or the spotlight kicked on. Dude, about threw her in the water. I had to grab her and hold her back.
Oh,
and I'm
man.
Like, hang on. So I had to turn the spotlight off. She's like, were you trying to push me in the water? I'm like, no, like I didn't. It wasn't my fault. I wasn't trying to do it.
At least you didn't wind up in the water like Mike did.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, Mike was testing out an auto boat and it freaked out on him. I guess he pushed a button or something and it just went. It did like an about face and went really, really fast in one direction and Mike went out the other side of the boat. Some video is hilarious.
Yeah. He actually promotes that a lot more than I figured he would.
Yeah. It was epic.
Yeah, it was.
Getting thrown out of your own boat.
Yep.
Him, nobody to blame it on. He was the only one in the boat.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, no. I think his son was with him.
Well, him and I almost got thrown out of one. But that was when Garmin was having an issue with their GPS spot lock.
Yeah.
And it wasn't calibrating with, like, a smaller size boat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was super windy.
Oh, dude, that's
and
the worst.
And we hit spot lock, and this thing just starts rocking back and forth. Like, literally trying to push you, pull or throw you out of the boat. And Mike's like hanging down. He jumped down to the deck and he's like, what's going on? And I'm like, I don't know.
My youngest daughter, Emma, was with me one day. We were fishing, and she's kind of starting to take up fishing and that sort of thing. And so I was helping her tie a lure on or whatever, and I had spot lock on, and the wind had started to pick up, and I'm holding my – and I have motion sickness really bad. Like, I just – like, when I fly, I have to be able to sit where I can look out the window, see the horizon kind of deal. And I'm holding my head down, and the wind's blowing like crazy, and I can hear the – I mean, that trolling motor is just doing work up there. And I'm holding my head down. And I'm tying this lure on or whatever, and I hand it back to her, and I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to be sick.
Oh,
it's so bad. But, yeah, it's those windy conditions with spot lock like that, especially for smaller boats when it's trying to hold that GPS position. Sometimes it can end up badly.
Yeah. You do need to be – mind your P's and Q's when you're doing all that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's all I've really got. You any other questions for –
No, man, I sincerely appreciate you coming down and talking to us. Like, this is awesome. I really do.
We do get to talk to customers after the fact, but we don't get to sit down and have a conversation about their boat a lot of times. That's really cool. Because you did what I would recommend most people do.
Yeah.
And we don't get that a whole lot. Yeah. A lot of people are just like, nah, I'm going to save $42 and do it myself. I'm like, oh, that's fine if you want to do that. But, you know, it's a lot harder for me to explain it over the phone when you're, you know, hours and hours away than it is. But, hey, let us just frame it and do the turf for you, and then you take and do the rest.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot recommend that enough. Yeah. I really can't. I mean, to me, that framing just – I haven't been on a boat where you have the kits, and I don't want to eat into, you know, obviously you guys offer that for people who feel confident enough to do it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, to me, it just kind of, it feels more sturdy having it welded and having, and to your point, you can't find a square corner in that boat anywhere, really. So it's easier to have somebody build it where they know what the height of the deck is going to be. They can account for the height of the batteries.
Yeah.
They can account for the height of the live well. They can account for, you know, the size of the hatches.
The drain below the live well.
Yeah,
you know, we keep talking about.
Put it in the right spot.
You know, you screw up on that, you could be 2 or 3 inches shallow in your live well tank quick.
So, very quickly.
Yeah.
Well, man, I can't thank you enough for coming having this discussion with us. It was awesome. I wanted to do this for a while.
And the bourbon.
Yeah, the bourbon was amazing.
Bro, that is my gift to you guys for all the help that you guys gave me. That's a small token of the help that you guys provided.
Well,
I can help.
Appreciate it. I'm glad. I love trying new stuff. It's really cool to hear their story. I'm going to have to check them out next time I go up to Kentucky on my way and stop in Nashville and do that little tour.
It's worth
it. Very cool.
Best $20 that you'll spend.
That's cheaper than most of these places.
Yeah, oh, it may have gone up since then, but that was like a year ago.
God, some of these places want an arm and a leg for a tour.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would have done a few of them by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But.
Awesome.
That's all I got.
Thank you, Trey.
Anything else?
Yeah, buddy.
It was awesome.
Good to see you. Yeah, you too, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you very much.
As always.
We'll throw up some images of his boat.
Yeah, if you're watching this on YouTube, there'll be some images that you can see.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so thank you very much for Tiny Boat Nation for sponsoring this episode. We appreciate it very much. If you need anything for your boat build, whether it be hatches or live wells and plumbing and wiring and switch panels and electrical turf. You know that's a thing? I just made it a thing.
Turf with life.
Turf with electrical. Electrical stuff. Turf. And all the other adult toys that you could put in a boat.
Yep, check out our new shallow water anchors, which are awesome, by the way. And we have a few videos up on the channel now showing you how to install them. It's a good way to do a little demo on them. Also, the Light Skiff Air, still available, Milha Light Skiff. And give us a call if you guys have any questions or concerns over anything.
And don't forget your drain plug.
Drain
plug's important. You found that out the hard way, didn't you?
It'd be a short, trip.
It's a short trip to the bottom of a lake.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.